This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and on Wednesday, Bethel residents gathered to highlight a crisis that continues to reverberate across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Here's a report.
We're standing here together, unified on something that's so, so heart-wrenching for us.
Carrie Atchuk addresses several dozen people in front of Bethel's Cultural Center. They hold signs and are about to march down the highway toward the Tundra Women's Coalition. The crowd includes employees from the Bethel District Attorney's Office, a group of Alaska State Troopers, community members young and old calling for safer communities.
How unified are we? How together are we? Without our TWC workers, without our state trooper workers, without all of the hospital workers and the people that work in the courthouse. Where are we?
For decades, the Tundra Women's Coalition, where Atchuk serves on the board of directors, has played a vital role in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta as a shelter and advocacy center for victims of violence and sexual assault. Today, other longtime members have come out to join in the group's annual peace walk. Monica Charles, a TWC board member for 25 years, walks near the head of the pack. She pushes back at the common characterization of high rates of domestic violence and sexual assault as an epidemic.
I wouldn't call it an epidemic. I think this has been ongoing for decades. To say that it's an epidemic, no, I think we've kind of stayed at this level of danger in the communities here.
Charles says she has seen families in crisis successfully seek treatment to address domestic violence and substance misuse outside of the region, but the effects can be short-lived.
But then once they go home, wherever it is, Bethel or one of the villages, if you don't have a positive support system, the likelihood of recidivism is very high.
Charles says issues with staffing first responders serve to compound the problem.
It would just be nice to have the support services needed. I think all the systems are overwhelmed. Obviously, the Bethel PD is always looking for more officers. We don't have enough village VPSOs in our VPOs in our villages. We have villages with no law enforcement.
The march finishes with sandwiches at the Tundra Women's Coalition headquarters. Back in her office, Executive Director Eileen Arnold says the key to addressing public safety challenges lies in prevention. She says stable housing is a big part of this. When people are faced with the choice between homelessness and a violent relationship, Arnold says they tend to choose the latter.
We've seen our greatest successes when we're able to give people long-term stable housing. It's better to put people into housing in like with their own family unit as opposed to shelter, which we do our best, but it's like sometimes 40, 50 people, all who've experienced trauma living together in tight circumstances. It's uncomfortable.
Thanks to federal funding, Arnold says the Tundra Women's Coalition has built up the roster of transitional housing for families in crisis, now at 4 units. But in general, she says that funding that prevents violence rather than responds to it can be more difficult to secure.
And there's not the same amount of money out there for activities like that as there is for something like shelter nights or a crisis response.
Arnold says her organization is not going it alone. The collaborators and supporters that showed up to march through Bethel are only a fraction of the broad web working to address domestic violence on the YK Delta. If you or anyone you know is experiencing domestic violence, TWC provides a 24/7 crisis hotline, shelter, counseling, legal advocacy, and community outreach to support survivors. Call 907-543-3456 or 1-800-478-7799. The Alaska Federation of Natives convention is less than 3 weeks away, and there are worries that the federal shutdown might affect some of the high-profile guests lined up for the gathering if it continues through October 16th, when AFN officially gets underway. Several Trump administration cabinet members are scheduled to appear, including Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. AFN President Ben Mallott says traditionally AFN has had strong relationships with Interior Secretaries, no matter whether there's a Democrat or Republican on the job. Mallott says the Department of Interior probably has the single most impact on Alaska Natives of any branch of the federal government. And while the Trump administration has made some decisions that have hit Native communities hard, Malott says, as governor of North Dakota, Burgum had a good relationship with tribes and might be able to help build bridges within the administration.
I think Doug Burgum has had an open ear to a lot of our issues and concerns. So I think it's building a relationship. That's something that we've always valued with the Department of Interior and the secretaries.
And while the issues keep changing, Malott says it's the relationships that last. That's why he says the secretary's first visit to AFN is so important. Malott says he's encouraged by the amount of time the secretary has spent with his tribal advisory committee.
He spent a whole day with that committee, which is amazing for a secretary to spend a whole day with the tribal advisory committee.
Burgum is scheduled to speak on Thursday, October 16th in the morning. Then Ron Jarman, the acting secretary for the Census Bureau, will address the gathering in the afternoon. The head of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Secretary Doug Collins, will appear on Friday. Malott says AFN is making backup plans in case the federal shutdown prevents them from attending the convention. This year's theme for AFN is Standing Strong, Standing United. The convention is the state's largest gathering and draws thousands of people from across the state. Most of the staff running three Alaska newspapers in Homer, Kenai Soldotna, and Juneau resigned in protest on Monday. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the decision came after the paper's corporate owner forced revisions to a story after pressure from a Republican state lawmaker.
The resignations include the regional editor in charge of three papers across the state, the Kenai Peninsula Clarion, the Homer News, and the Juneau Empire, along with the Clarion sports editor and two reporters based in Kenai and Homer. Clarion senior reporter Jake Dye says it's a long time coming. He says he's repeatedly complained about mismanagement since Alabama-based Carpenter Media Group bought the paper out of insolvency last year. But Dye says capitulating to pressure from a state lawmaker, going over the editors and reporters' heads, that's a step too far.
Sarah Vance sent one letter, you know, on a Wednesday night. She probably didn't even put a ton of thought into it and got our story changed. And, you know, what stops her from doing that the next time? What stops anybody?
Last week, Homer Republican Representative Sarah Vance posted a letter on state letterhead to her official Facebook page, objecting to an item in the Homer News about an article for the slain activist Charlie Kirk. She highlighted a paragraph that identified Kirk as a, quote, far-right leader with, quote, racist and controversial views. A day later, the story was removed, edited, stripped of a byline, and reposted, without, Dye says, any consultation with the reporter or the regional editor. On social media, Vance thanked Carpenter Media for responding to her concerns after a discussion with the paper's publisher. Vance and Carpenter Media did not respond to interview requests. Dye says he also hasn't gotten answers on what Vance asked for and what Carpenter agreed to. He and the other staff say in their joint resignation letter that the incident undermines their ability to do their jobs.
I feel like I should be able to trust, you know, Carpenter Media, and that's just not what happened in this case.
Dye says the mass resignations leave the three papers with just two reporters, one for the Homer News and another with the Juneau Empire. Veteran Alaska journalist and University of Alaska Fairbanks professor Paula Dobbin says she was shocked by the episode, not just by Vance's pressure campaign, but by Carpenter's decision to give in.
We pride ourselves as Americans on having freedom of the press, and for, you know, an ownership group to just go ahead and alter a news story based on a complaint by a politician without consulting the editor or the reporter, I just think it was appalling, and I fully support the staff for not putting up with it.
She says it's especially alarming given the fragile state of journalism in Alaska. It's not clear what will happen to the paper with most of the editorial staff gone, and she says she's concerned that'll leave Kenai Peninsula communities less informed.
I certainly hope that the Kenai is not going to become another news desert, because people have the right to be informed, and there's a lot that's happening down there, and we certainly need coverage of it.
She says she hopes another news source will emerge to fill the void. She points to the nonprofit Juneau Independent. That's an online outlet founded by the former editor of another Carpenter paper, the Juneau Empire, who also resigned over disagreements with management. Dye, the reporter, says as much as he loves journalism, he's not planning to go independent.
We don't have any plans like that. I don't think the others are really interested in that. We certainly don't have the money for that. I mean, I unfortunately kind of think this is it.
He says he hopes Carpenter Media will invest in its Alaska papers, but he says he's not optimistic. For now, Dye says he's headed to the local job center to apply for a job as a 911 dispatcher. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
KYUK News, I'm Evan Erickson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yoktun Ganumchit coming up.